And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says the global economy is an inverted triangle resting on the shoulders of the American consumer. But key to that assertion is that the American business these consumers look to must also be healthy. And for many businesses these days, it's all about thinking globally and acting locally. And joining us now from NPR headquarters in Washington is Dr. Larry Spinelli, Director of Outreach for the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. He's going to be in KC this week as part of a seminar with Kansas City's World Trade Center to help identify overseas investment opportunities for local businesses. That'll be Wednesday, November 14th at the boardroom at Union Station. Companies interested in attending may register online, and we have those details at kcur.org. Dr. Spinelli, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Tell us about the Overseas Private Investment Corporation.
Well, first of all, I know it's an odd-sounding name. I often get confused for, are you from OPEC, the oil cartel?
Right.
Which, considering the price of gasoline, is not a good thing to be associated with. But despite the confusing name, we are actually a U.S. government agency, and we are the only U.S. government agency that helps businesses that want to expand through investment in expanding markets throughout the world.
Now, it also sounds like this sort of consortium you might see in a James Bond movie. So how do you demystify Overseas Private Investment Corporation?
Well, and, you know, in a couple ways. First of all, the one thing that I like to tell people is a little bit of history, because I think it helps. And forgive me, I used to be a history professor, so I have somewhat of a bias there. But I think in this case, the history helps. We actually can trace our roots all the way back to the end of World War II and the Marshall Plan. And that's something that I think people can really relate to. And it was the idea, what we tried to do in the Marshall Plan, two things, is to try to make the situation and help rebuild Europe through not just foreign assistance, but also through economic development by getting the U.S. private sector to invest and expand and help to rebuild these economies. And we also, at the same time, of course, like all good foreign policy, we were also motivated by self-interest. We were trying to help those businesses to get a toehold into the global economy at the time. The challenge was for businesses is how do you get them to do that? Because for a lot of businesses, they looked at that opportunity and they said, it's risky. And we're worried about the risks, we're worried about the uncertainties, and where are we going to get the financing? Well, that's not any different than the questions that people ask today. And the answer at the time, and the answer today through OPIC still, is to create a public-private partnership, which is basically what we did, which is the government helping to mitigate against the risk and to provide, you know, the support that the businesses need, but yet letting the private sector do what it does best.
You mentioned your organization's roots in the Marshall Plan immediately following World War II with the expansion and rebuilding of Europe. It has immediate correlations to Missouri and Kansas. As you know, that plan was developed under Truman and then later implemented under Eisenhower as well, as those administrations were Missouri and Kansas back to back. So having said that, what's been the history of this organization's relationship to Missouri and Kansas?
Well, great question. We have, over the years, provided about $150 to $160 million of support for Missouri-based businesses. And, you know, most notably, Anheuser-Busch, which, is a name that everybody knows. We helped them. Anheuser-Busch was looking to expand into the Brazil market, and we were able to help them with political risk insurance. And we've also helped other companies, smaller companies. But we primarily operate by providing sort of two basic things to help businesses. And one is financing. That very easy, obvious, everybody gets that. You need money, show me the money. But the second thing is something that's a little bit more exotic and a little bit more, hard for people to understand, which is something called political risk insurance. And if I could just explain for a minute what that is and, you know, take you back to sort of my Marshall Plan story, because the real challenge when Secretary of State Marshall called the business community in and said, hey, we would like you to go and invest in war-torn Europe and help rebuild that. The business community looked at General Marshall and said, well, that's a wonderful idea. But, you know, we're really concerned about the risks. So what can you, the government, do to help us? And one of the things that they were able to do was to create something called political risk insurance, which was basically invented by the forerunner of OPIC. And what it does is it protects an investment in a business against anything that may happen in a country that's politically motivated. So let me give you an example. You're a Missouri company and you decide that you want to invest, you want to grow your business by expanding into Kansas or into Iowa, or I'll even get more exotic and take you to New Jersey, my home state. Well, all you really need to worry about is commercial failure. Is somebody going to buy your product? Because you're going into a place that has the same political system, the same legal system. You don't worry about any kind of political risks. But the minute that you leave the United States and you go to another country, particularly an emerging market country in the developing world, you've got to worry about things that could happen. For example,
military coups, for instance.
Right, exactly. Or let's say a government decides, and we've seen examples of this, you know, in Venezuela recently, where a government comes in and decides, you know what, they're going to ignore every contract that they have with a business, or they're going to come in and nationalize all the industries, or they're not going to let you take your money, your profit, out of the country. They're going to slap on foreign currency controls, or there's a war, there's a civil war, there's some kind of political violence. Any of those things can happen. And so that's why the idea was, well, why don't we, the U.S. government, offer this political risk insurance? Because an individual business is very, very challenged, and it's extraordinarily difficult for them to go and fight with a government if something happens, to get made whole again. But the U.S. government, representing all of the businesses that are insured and all that the U.S. government can bring to the table in terms of leverage, is in a much stronger position to do this. So that's how the whole idea of political risk insurance really started, you know, back in the late 1940s, and continues this day as one of the products that OPIC offers along with financing.
Dr. Spinelli, what are the most common questions a U.S.-based business, or more specifically a company in the Missouri-Kansas Metroplex, might ask about expanding overseas?
Well, one of the questions that I think businesses are often concerned about is the regulations and the challenges and what kind of barriers there are to looking overseas. And I'm happy to say, while OPIC specifically doesn't answer that question, it's not really our job. We're there sort of to provide the financing and the insurance once somebody decides to go forward with a project. But there are other parts of the U.S. government that can help. So the U.S. Commerce Department, for example, is that's what their job is. And they can provide a wealth of information on what the investment climate may be in a particular country. And they can even help set up meetings for businesses, Missouri businesses, for example, with potential partners through something that's called the Gold Key Program. And they'll arrange those meetings with people that they have done their research and the U.S. Commerce Department has researched and investigated and know these are potentially reliable people, and set up meetings for somebody to go and, you know, go into the country and meet with them. And once they've got a partner and an idea and a plan and a business plan, And then they're ready to say, okay, now where are we going to get the financing, and where we want to have political risk insurance, where can we get that? That's when they can come to us. But I would say the first question I get asked a lot is exactly that, is, you know, where are the good investment opportunities? And, you know, they're out there. It is it's challenging to invest, to do business in an emerging market country. There's no doubt about it. I think anybody who has experienced it would tell you that. But at the same time, it can also be potentially very rewarding, and, you know, you can, you know, really the profit that you can make from a successful venture in a developing country is really pretty impressive.
What are the circumstances or criteria under which the Overseas Private Investment Corporation would confer financing on an American company? What are the factors that you look at?
Well, that's a great question, because the first question I always would ask people, and the first thing people need to consider, is do they want to operate? Are they looking to go into a country that OPIC's open for business in? We're open for business in over 150 emerging market countries. The one big exception is China. In 1989, after Tiananmen Square, Congress closed our programs down as a sort of punishment for, against China for what had happened there. And it will take an act of Congress to reopen our programs. That hasn't happened yet. So that's a sort of one big kind of glaring omission. And obviously,
and the irony there is that they're the second largest economy in the world now.
Right. I mean, you could also argue, they seem to be doing okay without us. So I'll leave that one to the politicians in the Congress to decide. But that's the sort of one big kind of glaring omission. And of course, in addition to that, the countries that the United States does not have relations with, Cuba, North Korea, Iran, we're certainly not there. But basically, anything that qualifies as an emerging market, a developing, not the developed world, but developing countries, we're open for business. About, as I said, about 155, 56, it sort of can change periodically. Those countries are listed on OPIC's website, so people can find that out. So that's question number one. Are you going into a country where we do business? Secondly, you need to have a U.S. business or a U.S. investor needs to be involved in the project. That's critical. And because we're here to mobilize the U.S. private sector. You can have a local partner, and oftentimes people do. If you're going into Nigeria, you can have a Nigerian partner. But we need to have a U.S. investor, U.S. business involved in the project. And then the third thing that we're going to look at is, do you have some experience in what it is that you're doing? Now, that may seem like an obvious question, but I can tell you honestly, I get at least one call a week from somebody who says, well, I've been an accountant all my life, but what I would really like to do is go and run a resort hotel in a tropical rainforest in Costa Rica.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, exactly. And would you, OPIC, give me a loan? And I sort of stop them and I say, now, put your U.S. taxpayer hat on and let me ask you the question, should I give you this loan since you've had no experience? And people usually sort of admit, yeah, that was a bit of an ask. So we look for people who have experience or that their partners do, 3 to 5 years of experience here in the United States. There's some exceptions to that. If it's a new technology and innovative, something new, clean technology, renewable energy, some, information technology that's new, we would certainly make an exception. But for the most part, we'd like to see some experience. And then finally, we need a business plan. How are you going to make this work? Are we convinced that based on your projections that the revenue stream from your project is going to be enough to pay back the loan that we're going to give you? And then finally, we need somebody has also got to come forward with some money. They've got to put down, a down payment, like what a down payment would be when you buy a house. Nobody's going to give you a mortgage for 100% of the house, and we're not going to give you a loan for 100% of the project. We need to see you come up with some equity, anywhere from, 35 to 40% of the total project costs. That's going to show us that you've got some skin in the game, so we feel confident that if there's a bump in the road, you're not going to walk away from the project because you've got as much to lose as OPIC does.
I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest joining us from NPR headquarters in Washington is Dr. Larry Spinelli, Director of Outreach for the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. He's coming to KC this week as part of a seminar with Kansas City's World Trade Center to help identify overseas investment opportunities. And that's on Wednesday, November 14th at Union Station in the boardroom at 30 West Pershing Road in Kansas City. Companies attending or people attending may register online, and we have those details at kcur.org. Backing up from the financing component,
sure,
and accountants that want to chill in Costa Rica, make the distinction, if you will, Dr. Spinelli, between an emerging economy and a developing economy, because I think that's something that a lot of people get mixed up.
Well, for the point of our definition, we actually put them both together and they would all be on our list. But a developing economy tends to be at the sort of lower end where there's still a struggle. The median income in the country is extremely low. There's not a lot of foreign direct investment in the country. And it's still a struggle and a challenge to attract investment there. We certainly would include those countries in the places that we would go. An emerging market is one of the countries that I would say in that group that has sort of graduated up to the next level, where there's starting to be a increase in, the median income, and they're beginning to create a more attractive investment climate and therefore beginning to see an increase in foreign direct investment. And we really run the gamut of all of those countries. I mean, for example, you know, we were the first, we were supporting the first wave of investment in Iraq. As soon as the war ended and the when the provisional authority was actually still in charge, we were supporting investment there. We're supporting a significant amount of investment in Afghanistan, but also at the same time in places like Brazil, like Ghana, that are really emerging up there. Our goal is really to someday to put ourselves out of business so that people, U.S. companies, U.S. businesses are able to go and invest in these countries and expand by, you know, into the global marketplace without the help of OPEC, that they're able to get the support that they need in the private sector. It's not our job to put the banks out of business or the insurance companies out of business. But, you know, the reality is that the financing is not available for these markets in the private sector, and the political risk insurance isn't. And that's why, you know, we continue to do what we do.
And certainly for investments in Iraq and Afghanistan, the political risk insurance would definitely come in handy there.
Absolutely. You know, it's not my place to tell people whether or not they should buy political risk insurance. And if you want our financing, you don't have to take the insurance. And if you want the insurance, you don't have to take the financing. That's up to the individual investor or business. But it's sort of like, you know, nobody likes insurance until it turns out that you get sick or, you know, you rear end somebody on the freeway or you have a fire in your house, and then you're so grateful that you were paying those premiums. So,
or a dictator, or a dictator in a uniform,
exactly,
steals
exactly.
your money to buy a Mercedes Benz with gold plated tires.
Well, and you know, we can, you know, show example after example of countries where 2 years ago, 3 years ago, a year and a half ago, they looked like pretty safe places and pretty stable places. And you know, think about even in the Middle East. Some of the countries, you know, as part of the Arab Spring, you know, they're now, you know, facing some uncertainties. And I think if you're going to, you want to go invest there, and I think there's opportunities there, and it's certainly a priority for us and a priority for the Obama administration. But I think you'd want to think about having political risk insurance because, you know, until things get a little bit more stable. And even then, you know, you've got a long-term investment. You want to think about, nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody can see what's going to happen and what the future is going to bring. And I think that's where the political risk insurance becomes very valuable.
What are some of the hottest or most lucrative emerging markets?
Well, you know, again, it depends on the investment, on the project. You know, you can go to an emerging market that has great opportunities. And if your business plan is, you know, kind of flawed, or if you're undercapitalized, your project isn't going to make it. And you can go to a place like Afghanistan that's pretty challenging and, you know, and somehow make it. So I'm always amazed at, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit of people who are willing to take a chance and the people that have great ideas. I would say of the projects that we've seen, that the biggest increase of geographically, certainly in terms of projects that OPEC is supporting, and the largest interest that I've seen as I travel all over the United States talking about OPEC, is in Africa. We've seen a huge increase in our portfolio and projects we're supporting in Africa, and we see a lot more interest in it. As you know, again, it was a priority of the President Obama. It's a priority of this administration, and it really I think we've seen a lot of interest there, a lot of potential places like Ghana. And I'm not just talking about South Africa, but, you know, Ghana, people are even, you know, looking at opportunities in Nigeria and Kenya and Uganda. Again, still challenging, but I think there's some great opportunities there, particularly for small businesses.
This is also happening in concert with great Chinese government expansion in Africa as well.
Oh, absolutely. And everywhere you turn in Africa, there are the Chinese. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I haven't mentioned, you know, I can talk about OPEC for hours, as you can imagine, but we require all of the projects that we support to follow certain policy requirements. So all of our projects have to adhere to international standards of worker and human rights. And they also have to follow World Bank standards on the environment, environmental standards, very strict. So even if you're going into a country, for example, that doesn't have any environmental standards, if you're getting support from OPEC, you've got to follow our environmental guidelines, which are pretty strict. And the idea is, because we are also not just helping U.S. businesses to expand, but we're also trying to bring to these countries economic development that reflects good practices. So, you know, not child labor, not sweatshops, you know, not building, you know, factories next to, you know, Lake Victoria. And, you know, this is, I think, done us in good stead over the last, you know, decades that OPEC's been in business, whereas one of the criticisms you hear of Chinese investment, particularly in Africa, is that it has not been respectful of the environment. They go in and do a project, and then, you know, 3 to 5 years they leave, and then there's a great, you know, environmental, negative environmental impact that's been done on the country.
You mentioned Africa as a big place for expansion. Brazil, as we know, is one of the world's hottest economies. You mentioned the deal between them and Anheuser-Busch that your organization helped foster through. I guess to follow up that question, what specific business sectors are particularly hot or of value for overseas expansion?
Well, again, I think it depends on the region, on the country. One thing we know, that there's a great interest in U.S. technology and U.S. products. So a priority for us has been clean technology, renewable energy. This is something, you know, President Obama has talked about, the fact that even if we do everything right in the United States, if the rest of the world doesn't follow in terms of renewables and clean technology, that, you know, we're still going to be in trouble in terms of climate change. And so this has been a great priority for OPEC, our top sector. And there's a great interest in emerging markets, places like Brazil, places like India, for U.S. technology. They tried Chinese technology for a while, but they realized it may have been cheaper, but it was also inferior to U.S. technology. So now there's a big demand for that. And of course, the flip side of that, what that means is it's also going to help to create jobs here in the United States. And that's one thing that I think, if I could say just really quickly, when I talked about the policies that we follow, the other policy that's important to us is that none of the projects that we support can result in a job loss here in the United States. Sometimes, you know, I get a question if I'm giving a speech and people, you know, hear overseas investment, and they're like, oh, you know, are you sending those jobs overseas? And, you know, some of that came up during the presidential election, that whole debate. And for us at OPEC, the answer is very easy, and we have a great answer. And so I always welcome the question. The answer is no. Absolutely not. We do not support sending jobs overseas. We will not support any projects that are going to result in a job loss in the United States. What we do is help U.S. businesses to actually expand their operations by getting into the global marketplace. So over the years, we have actually helped to create hundreds of thousands of jobs in the United States through the projects we support, or through those projects using U.S. suppliers. And that's an important thing in a point that I really wanted to make. So renewable energy, clean technology is a place where I think we see opportunities for investment, as well as potential for, you know, expanding industry here in the United States.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. With this upcoming seminar, Dr. Spinelli, help local businesses understand the role of the U.S. government in overseas business expansion.
Well, absolutely. One of the things that, you know, OPEC really, it's been over a decade now. We made a decision about 10 years ago that we wanted to help small businesses. We realized, you know, a lot of that, you know, we have big clients. And I mentioned Anheuser-Busch before, but that a lot of small business, particularly as they started looking for opportunities outside of the United States to grow their business, that they found it very challenging to get the financing that they needed from a bank. And they certainly needed the political risk insurance. So for really more than a decade, we have really made a great effort to try to reach out to small businesses, to let them know what we do. That's what really brings me to Kansas City, to let them know about our programs, so that they can learn how we can help them, and whether they can use us today or in a month or in 6 months or a year, but to know that, you know, we're there and we're available. We're a tiny little agency, 200 people on three floors of a building in Washington, D.C. We don't have regional offices or local offices. So we need to get out there. And that's really, I haven't been home very much in the last decade, because that's really what I have been on the road, you know, preaching the gospel of OPIC, so people are aware of our programs and that they can take advantage of them.
Kansas City has some companies such as Cerner and Sprint and multinational corporations in the state as a whole, such as Anheuser-Busch, which makes global expansion a no-brainer for them. But what do you say to a local business owner who says, I'm having enough trouble staying afloat in this economy right here where I live? How can global expansion help me?
Well, what happens is oftentimes, and I think this last recession we've been through is as good example of this as any, where other countries, emerging market countries, for a whole variety of reasons, may not be feeling the impact in the same way, or sectors may be hit in a different way. So, for example, the housing sector in Central America and in Africa did not take the same nosedive that our housing sector did. So if you're in that field, that may mean that while your domestic market is, you know, not as good as it once was, and it's coming back, but it's going to take some time, that there may be some opportunities for you in another country. Or if you're doing something as a small business, because, again, it's amazing to me how innovative small businesses are. You have got an idea that nobody else has, or a technology or a process that, you know, there's a great opportunity for you to expand.
Our guest joining us from NPR headquarters in Washington is Dr. Larry Spinelli, Director of Outreach for the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. He's going to be in KC this week as part of a seminar with Kansas City's World Trade Center to help identify overseas investment opportunities. That's Wednesday, November 14th at Union Station, located at 30 West Pershing Road in Kansas City. We have more details on that seminar at kcur.org. Dr. Spinelli, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a great pleasure.
Our show is produced by Danny Alexander. Up to Date is next with singer-songwriter Roseanne Cash and a look at the book Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.